Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. We're going to bring in General Jack Keane, retired four-star general, chairman, Institute for the Study of War, Fox News senior strategic analyst, and, bless him, Presidential Medal of Freedom recipient. I was in the room when he got it. General Keane, good morning, sir. Thank you very much for coming on, as always. And, boy, gee, am I confused between minor incursions and then all these diplomatic meetings. And then Secretary of State Blinken is now going to communicate in writing with Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov over Russia's intentions and our response. And meanwhile, we're back on our heels, General. We are reacting to Russia. They seem to have the whip hand. I don't get this. I'm as confused as ever, and it looks like an invasion is imminent. So please help me.
Well, you're absolutely right. With 100,000-plus troops outside of Ukraine, on amphibious ships in the Black Sea, north of eastern Ukraine in the Donbass region with large concentration of forces, in the tri-border area, which is Belarus, Russia, and Ukraine, where they come together north of the capital city of Ukraine, another major concentration, and now just recently moving in by train to Belarus, another large segment of troops from as far east as Siberia. So there's four major Russian troop locations around Ukraine, and obviously they are preparing for some kind of invasion, not a minor incursion, which is the term the president used, and certainly, that was an irresponsible description, of what we're facing. And even though he walked it back, Larry, I still have concerns about it because the way he said it, it was so conversational and it was so instinctive for him. It was like he was repeating something that he has been discussing, with his national security and foreign policy team, something you have been a part of yourself in so many discussions in the White House with the President of the United States. And he was reflecting that discussion, in my judgment. So what does that mean? Well, it puts doubt in the mind of Putin about our sincerity, about the tough sanctions. And it also does the same thing for allies. So here's the issue. The United States has made a decision that we're not going to do anything preemptively before an invasion to discourage the Russians from conducting that invasion, other than to say rhetorically, this is what we would do if you invade. Mm-hmm. And so no preemptive actions. And what could they be? Significant arms delivery of major weapon systems that would truly help the Ukrainians. They have a list, and we are only contributing a minor contribution to that list. We're giving them small arms weapons. We're giving them anti-tank weapons. They want anti-aircraft weapons. They want anti-ship weapons. They want some mortars. They want some artillery. They want significant capability. We should have been giving this capability to them for some time. We also could have moved NATO forces into the countries that are bordering the area of this potential conflict, particularly Poland, Romania, etc., and to send a signal to Putin that, look, we're not going to stand by here. You're not going to intimidate and put pressure on NATO as a result of a military incursion into Ukraine. So we've taken none of those preemptive actions. And certainly putting troops into Ukraine is something that three presidents, Obama, Trump, and now Biden, have all looked at. And because it's not a NATO country, they have made the decision that we're not going to go to war over Ukraine. We would over a NATO country, but Ukraine is not aligned, and there's been no preparation of the American people, certainly, to go to war over Ukraine or the Congress. So that has never been an issue, you know, for three presidents. But yes, we are in a weakened position as a result of the strategy that we have elected to use. And the second thing is, we're relying on tough sanctions, economic sanctions, and also some military action, increased aid, hopefully along the lines I was talking about. This is if the invasion occurs, and what are we going to do then? But here's the problem with the economic sanctions. We don't have unanimity with the Europeans on this. You know, the German new chancellor who took Angela Merkel's place, Scholz, is sending mixed signals on whether he would not activate Nord Stream 2, which has now been constructed and would provide the natural gas outlet from Russia into Germany and throughout Europe. And also, they can't seem to agree on what the tough economic sanctions would be, whether we take Russia out of the SWIFT, which is the international financial messaging system, whether we target Putin personally, whether we go after Russian banks. There's not unanimity on that. And certainly, Larry, the Russians know this. They're watching what's going on with the Europeans and the United States, that we don't have the kind of firm consensus that we want to have. So, yeah, that's a weak hand. And that is the only hand we're playing, because we gave up on taking any preemptive action, you know, before the invasion.
You know, General, I was talking yesterday at some length with my friend Steve Mnuchin, former Treasury Secretary, when I was at NEC. About 90% of the world's financial transactions are denominated in dollars. It's a dollar-based system. You mentioned SWIFT. SWIFT is the global clearing arrangement. Now, it's not that hard. We did it with Iran, and we've done it elsewhere. You slapped the sanctions on the Russian central bank, and then you slapped secondary sanctions on the larger Russian banks. There's no really big major Russian banks compared to Western banks, but that's what you do. And you lock them out of the dollar-based financial system. Now, that they can do some business with China, but you're talking about very limited transactions there, very, very limited. We could do that. We can do that unilaterally. It would be nice to have our NATO friends come with us, but the NATO banks will come with us. We will force them to do so, because the dollar is the world's reserve currency and we're the dominant banking system. So all I'm saying is, this is not hard. It is very, very feasible. We know how to do it. I know that Yellen at the Treasury is looking at it and negotiating with our so-called NATO partners. And, of course, the other thing we could do, General, as you well know, is sanction the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which, for reasons that elude me, the Cruz Amendment got 55 votes to restore those sanctions, which initially were a gift to Putin to take them off. But the Biden White House opposed it. So you needed 60 votes to win. So I'm just saying, not only are we reacting to Putin, we're actually actively opposing measures that would preempt them to stop any invasion.
Yeah, and that's all been very, very frustrating, certainly, to watch that. The other concern that I have dealing with the sanctions is, obviously, Europe is very dependent on energy sources coming out of Russia. And as we impose sanctions, let's assume we have the invasion, and now we're imposing sanctions. And the Europeans, we want them to be with us, obviously, on this. But as the sanctions on Russia begin to impact their economy and begin to impact their energy sources, my concern is they'll get weak-kneed once again here. And that is the problem. This is really a moment for NATO and the alliance, because their DNA should be to counter Russians' aggression and expansion. It's very much similar to the same mission that we had during the Cold War. But by then, in those days, certainly, we had complete unanimity. We had hundreds of thousands of forces facing each other across a common border between the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. But the European leadership that we're dealing with today is completely different than the European leadership we were dealing with during the Cold War. And it manifests itself even now when we have a major threat from Russia in terms of its potential expansion that will undermine the security of Europe itself. And we're struggling to get the kind of unanimity that we should have out of this political and military alliance. I just hope that this is a major wake-up call for these NATO European leaders. The Eastern NATO European leaders are all with us on this. It's the Western European leaders, and particularly France and Germany, that are really the problem here.
General, could you walk through once more? The Russian troop movements have gone where?
Yeah, well, the Russian troop movements are in four places. The most significant number of Russian troops are north of eastern Ukraine, the so-called Donbass region,
right,
which borders right up against the Black Sea. So north of the Ukraine-Russian border is the largest concentration of Russian troops. They have all come out of what they refer to as their southern military district, and they are full up, contained to be able to move into that region, the Donbass region, and sustain themselves. The Institute for the Study of War that I'm associated with, we've looked at it in detail, and they have all the representation that they need to be able to conduct a limited invasion into the eastern sector. There's also ships in the Black Sea and amphibious ship capability that they can put Russian troops on and approach eastern Ukraine from the sea, not just from the north. And then north of the capital city of Ukraine, on the border there, I refer to as the tri-border area, Belarus, Russia, and Ukraine, is another concentration of forces. And they have come from the Western Military District. And they're there, obviously, if you're going to move into the capital city, this is the fastest way to do it. Hmm. And then further to the west, in Belarus, is where the additional forces are coming as we speak. In theory, to begin an exercise in the second week of February is the advertisement. The fact is they're being put there either to intimidate and threaten or to participate in an invasion. When I look at this from a military general's perspective, one of the clever things the Russians could do is bring those forces in from Belarus and show them coming across the border so that the Ukrainians would have to pull some forces that they have in the east and pull them back towards that to blunt that advance. And meanwhile, it's only a feint. They have no desire to go very far. But once those forces are reversed and start to come towards them, then begin the invasion into the Donbass region north of the Ukrainian border, and there would be less Ukrainians to defend against them. So there's plenty of options that our friend Putin has here. There are some, you referred to it, there are some diplomatic moves still being made. I mean, so after the Lavrov-Blinken meeting on Friday, they decided to talk some more. The Russians have put their proposals in writing, and the United States to date has not. As you mentioned in the introduction, Blinken has committed to put our response in writing and go back to him. There are some things that we can talk about, Larry. We're not going to discuss Ukraine never being permitted to go into NATO, which is a Russian position. We're not going to agree that we would pull out which what Putin wants, which is quite preposterous, NATO forces out of the Eastern European NATO countries that have joined NATO since the collapse of the Soviet Union. We're not going to do that. That would be the dismantling of NATO. But there are a couple of other things. Russia has concerns about offensive missiles being placed in Eastern Europe, and because of the proximity of those missiles to Moscow. And as an example, one of their concerns about Ukraine, so our audience understands, when Putin gets exercised about Russia's security situation, the Ukraine border on Russia is 300 miles from Moscow. And we obviously have numerous weapon systems that could range and cover those 300 miles quite quickly. So that's one of the concerns he has. We can discuss offensive missiles that we have on our side of the border and they have on theirs. We can also discuss, and the Russians want to do this, military exercises. Well, let's talk about it. We have these large-scale military exercises. If we can reduce the frequency and the number of those exercises to accommodate security concerns, that's a negotiable item. So there are things that we can talk about, but undermining NATO and denying further expansion of NATO, I would hope the Biden administration would never make a concession like that. That would be the dismantling of NATO if we ever did make a concession like that.
You know, I spoke yesterday on the Fox Business Show with Senator Roger Wicker, who was part of the bipartisan group of senators that just came back from a visit to Ukraine. And he was very clear that Kiev expects an invasion. Okay, they expect an invasion. Now, what interests me with your military lineup is that it's not just the Donbass eastern region that the Russian troop movement could come right toward and into Kiev. Is that your implication?
That's correct.
That has not received enough visibility or publicity, so to speak.
Now, the reason for that, and because most analysts, while Putin has many options, it's only one of those options is what you're describing, is an all-out invasion to conduct a regime change, which is something. The reason why we're here is because of Putin's frustration with this regime, who is looking to the West, looking to economic integration with the EU, looking for political and military alliance with NATO. And look at the people of Ukraine. They were in the streets in 2014 by the hundreds of thousands and ran out Yanukovych, who was Putin's stooge, who was running the country. Why did that happen? It happened because they don't want to be associated with Russia. They're on the border of Russia. They know what the quality of life experience is like in Russia. They want the quality of life experiences like in Europe and in the United States, and they are privy to that, certainly. They're very intimately familiar with the quality of life we have. That's what they want, and that is what this is really all about. But that option, the all-out regime change option, most of us analysts look at that and say, well, that is possible. It's not likely. And the reason why it's not likely, because then he owns the entire country. He has to occupy it. And Ukrainians will fight him tooth and nail in a protracted war that would last as long as it takes for them to get the Russian troops out of Ukraine. And Putin knows that. He's got Afghanistan in his rearview mirror, where they went in there for 9 to 10 years and eventually had to leave because of the accumulation of casualties and the loss of political will by the Russian people for that. That would happen here. So I don't think, while he's threatening that and he's using it as leverage, and that's what he's got those troops there for, it's only possible for him to do it, but I don't think it's likely for him to do it. Going into the Donbass region is much more likely.
General, we're on a new time schedule because we've gone syndicated. I just need to, if you could stay with me, I got a quick break and then I got to come back. We got 4 or 5 more minutes to go. If you could just have some patience with us, we're working out the kinks. Folks, we're talking to General Jack Keane, retired 4-star general and now chairman of the Institute for the Study of War and Fox strategic analyst. I'm Larry Kudlow. We'll be right back with this Russian-Ukraine story, which unfortunately looks worse and worse. Please stay right here with us. Welcome back, folks. We're talking to General Jack Keane, retired 4-star chairman, Institute of Study of War, Fox News senior strategic analyst, and, of course, Presidential Medal of Freedom recipient. General, thank you for your patience. We just got a couple of minutes. We're working out the kinks of our new national syndication. Once upon a time, I had 185 stations. Anyway, we're getting back to that. General, your best guess here. I mean, you mentioned the second week of February, I think, for Russian military exercises. This thing's got to play itself out at some point. There's got to be an end game here.
Yeah. Either there's going to be a diplomatic breakthrough and there's an agreement between the United States, principally, and Russia, and Russia de-escalates its troops, probably not immediately, but over a period of time, because somebody Putin doesn't want to lose any face. Or the obvious, you know, what the senators were telling you and your audience based on what they learned in talking to the Ukraine officials.
Yeah.
That is, an invasion is a limited invasion of some type is likely. What Putin's frustration is, and when we have talked about it many times, is NATO's expansion at the expense of what he perceives to be Russia's security. They really welcome the buffer that Eastern European nations aligned with the former Soviet Union provided to them. And that has really frustrated him from a security perspective. And certainly Ukraine becoming, and this isn't discussed very much, Ukraine becoming a flourishing, thriving, capitalistic, democratic system on the border of Russia, the second largest country in Europe, and thriving as an example to the Russian people, that is something that really intimidates him.
Wow.
So this is what he is about here.
And it's a great
about
point.
It's about him protecting Russia and his system and his dictatorship.
All right, we'll leave it there. That's a great point, General Keane. I'm going to hold that thought for the coming week. Anyway, General Jack Keane, thank you ever so much. Folks, I'm Larry Kudlow. This is The Larry Kudlow Show. After a bunch of quick breaks, we're going to talk to former Texas Governor and Energy Secretary Rick Perry about the energy side of our economic problems.